scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla, the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla, rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, it is Friday. Happy Friday. Welcome to Flames Talk on this Friday, September 27th. Let's get things going. We've got a good hour planned for you ahead here from the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Now, I don't know if this is going to remain on Friday or not, but we enjoyed doing this last week, so we said, why not do it again? Little Friday media roundtable for the next hour here on Flames Talk. So you got Steinberg here, literally around a round table at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, joined by Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Wes has been co-hosting with us all week, so of course Wes is going to be with us. Hello, sir.
I just want the record to show I don't remember saying I enjoyed it last Friday.
I enjoyed it last Friday, so that's fair. Next is Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, who's sitting across from me as part of our roundtable. Hello, Vix.
Let the record show I enjoyed it after Wes left, so put me in the win column there.
Glad that we're all putting everything on the record. And finally, let's say hello to Wes's colleague over at Post Media. Post Media's Danny Austin is with us here in the Hot Stove Lounge as well. We've got a full four-person roundtable ready to rock and roll. Mr. Austin, welcome to the Flames Talk Media Roundtable.
Thanks. I thought last week's roundtable was great, guys. I think you did a really great job, all of you.
Did you hit like and subscribe?
He's got a point there.
I don't know if I liked and subscribed, yeah, but I thought it was great, and I want to be supportive.
I like that. Well, it's good to have you, boys. It's good to have everybody in person. I like these actual in-person roundtables. They're good. Text lines open at 960-960. A little interaction a little bit later on this hour as well. And here we are. We're now officially with all the on-ice sessions done. This is 8 days into training camp, which is kind of close to the midway mark of training camp 2024. So, got some topics we'll kick around for the next hour, and we'll see if we can stretch out a few of them, because I think the first one is probably good for at least half the show when we start to dive in. And we've seen some big stories over the last little bit, whether it be Sam Hanzek and the way he's playing, or the way Matt Coronado's been playing, the goaltending. We just saw Zane Parekh sent down to OHL Saginaw, so he plays his two preseason games, but the first-round pick back in June, he's going back to the Ontario Hockey League as well. So let's just kick it around, and we can go back and forth and dive in on each of those, each of these. Wes, you go first. What's your biggest story thus far of training camp? We're 8 days in. We're about midway through. What's the biggest story of training camp so far for the Flames?
You know, proof that I always have my finger right on the pulse, I'm going to pick one you didn't even mention as a possibility, because I think Coronado and Sam Hanzek and others have been huge stories of this camp, the tie for me goes to the Rasmus Anderson comparison. I know we haven't talked as much about Hunter Brustevich in the last couple of days, but I think going back to Penticton, the way he's fit in so far, the sort of timeline or the ETA that we're maybe seeing from a 19-year-old defenseman who is, I will stress, going to start with the Calgary Wranglers, but I think you and I have talked about it all week. Looks like a guy who is going to be an important piece and maybe a piece sooner than later for the Calgary Flames. I just think the impression that Hunter Brustevich has made in his first year out of the OHL, that's been the biggest story of camp for me.
So let's before we dive in on each one individually, let's go around the table and get each person's biggest story. So Wes says the work of Hunter Brustevich on the back end. Danny, which way do you lean?
I go Samuel Hanzek. And the main reason for that is just I think we spent a year really having questions about whether this guy was actually, you know, as good as we maybe thought he was coming out of last year's draft. And I think it's instructive with a guy like Zane Parikh, who we talked to him earlier today, and he was pretty unhappy with the performance he had in training camp. But then when we asked Huska, Huska said the fact that those two went for dinner and just kind of shared their experiences, and Parikh was able to look at Hanzak and see what a difference a year can make and a full summer of working out can make. So for me, seeing Sam Hanzak, all of a sudden, I mean, you see where he'll fit in, whether that's this year or down the road, I think it's hard to ignore.
Fix?
Well, I had two, and Hanzik was my second because it's kind of hard to ignore him as a story when he leads the entire NHL in preseason scoring as well. But I'm still going to go back to the goaltending situation where you have Dustin Wolf, Dan Vladar, and Devin Cooley competing for 2.5-ish spots, depending on what the Calgary Flames are going to do with their goaltending. You got Wolf with a 180 goals against average and 943 save percentage. Vladar in a very limited sample size, but still 19 saves, a 150 and a 947. Then you have the newcomer Cooley with maybe not a great-looking 370 goals against average, but the 917 save percentage, some of the shelling he got up in Edmonton and managed to hold the fort there and coming in a tough situation in Vancouver. But to me, it's still an intriguing option. It's still a little bit of a question mark. I do think we'll see some separation, but to me, who's going to be the number one goalie or who's going to be the starting goalie is still the most fascinating question for me.
So you're the guy who knows where to find preseason stats. I got to ask you later where to run those down.
I can show you that.
I've been tracking this manually. What are you talking about? There's not a CBS Sports website out there that you can just look up and find it, or the media site, for example.
It's right on the media site.
I know. I was just impressed. Impressed with the statistical rundown.
First time Wes Gilbertson's ever been impressed by something I've said or did.
It's a big day for you.
Whoa, for me? You're looking at him. And for me?
He's the one who's never impressed by anything. Oh, that's the
touche.
That's the exciting part.
I should also note that, like, not an hour ago, we were sitting in the media room, and neither of us could figure out where to find the preseason stats.
Well,
so, like,
let's not get
for Parikh. Okay.
For Parikh.
Less impressed now, boys. Less impressed.
I can tell you that Zane Parikh played two games. Is minus one, 0 penalty minutes, and 1 shot on goal.
There we go.
Those are Zane Parikh's preseason stats.
Patrick, what's been the big story of camp for you?
You know, the goaltending is the...
Attaboy.
Not just because Vic said it, but no, the goaltending is the one for me because it's and maybe let's start there because that's the first double up.
Let me just say one thing.
Yeah.
The fact that we... Because you guys are right. Goaltending's been a huge story. Danny's right. Sam Hanzak's been a huge story.
You're wrong.
I don't think I'm totally wrong on perception.
You're also right.
We haven't even talked about Matt Coronato. Like, the fact that there have been this many storylines, and more often than not, they include players in their teens or early 20s, is a really good sign for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah. Well, I think... and you're, because you could probably, if you throw Coronato into the mix, you could probably come up with a few other ones. And the fact that you're right, like there are a number of different things that are potentially the top story means that it's not a bad camp so far. It's a camp that has had plenty of competition and plenty of positive things happen. I guess the reason for me, guys, that I lean towards goaltending is because it was at my number one most uncertain. And while I don't think the uncertainty has completely evaporated, Danny, like I think that the fact that we're talking about all three guys having good numbers, having good performances, at no point have the Flames gotten a poor goaltending performance in the preseason midway through. And so knowing they've got some tough decisions to make there, at the very least, the goalies aren't making it easy, and there's not one guy who hasn't been very good. Like that. This, to me, is a real positive trend going into the second half of camp.
Well, I think particularly, like you... take us back to late June, and if you were to find me sitting on a patio somewhere having a beer talking with friends, I would have, my expectation for this year would have been like, okay, well, Vladar's a starter, Wolf's the backup, and it's going to be a real area of weakness for the team. I mean, I really thought like this would be a transition year with Vladar kind of filling in while you get Wolf ready for more work in a year or two, and that's just not how it's playing out right now. And I mean, Dustin Wolf, I think, has looked sharp. Like, those numbers don't lie. I think he's looked really, really good. And frankly, I think Dan Vladar's looked composed. And even in speaking with him, I mean, he views that starting job as his own. He's comporting himself and carrying himself like a starting goalie, and I think his play on the ice has backed that up. So the idea that it would have gone 2.5 months ago from sort of, for me at least, a perceived area of weakness to an area where I'm not saying it's necessarily a full-on strength, but it's not an area where I expect them to lose games entirely because of their goaltending.
Well, I think Kevin Woodley said yesterday with Wes, and I was like, I like the depth. That was kind of the, yeah. All three of them have played well, and you know they may not have that bona fide number one guy, but they've got some depth there.
Well, and I don't want to say that this is my concern because it's not my job on the line whether I'm one of these three goalies or Ryan Husker or Craig Conroy, but I wondered if coming into the training camp and once you get into preseason action, what happens if all three of these goalies have a 3.5 goals against and an .880 save percentage, and you're trying to pick the best of three guys that haven't really stepped up? And all we heard leading into the exhibition series was, I'm so excited to see who steps up, whether that's Craig Conroy, whether that's Ryan Huska. Well, to a certain degree, you can make arguments that all three have stepped up so far, and I think it leads a little bit to that uncertainty or that picture. While maybe a little bit clearer than it was a week ago, is still a little bit foggy from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the overarching question remains, who can prove that they're a number one in the NHL? Because what these three guys have in common is none of them have carried the load at the NHL level. But if you want to talk about reasons for encouragement in September, they all look like they're up to the challenge. I do think the fact that they're all performing so far, and you know, we keep repeating, pump the brakes, it's really early, but the fact they're all performing so far, that competition, you know, the old, you know, rising tide, that I think there's something to that. But you know, we're gonna be sitting here
like
in October,
each one pushing the other one,
yeah,
kind of thing.
You're not you know, kind of plugging your nose and saying, okay, well, this guy's the starter because it can't be this guy and it can't be this guy. But we're going to be talking in October and November and into December and January about who's proving they can be a number one guy. And we've known that's coming, and that's the biggest question that still has to be answered.
Is there a point in the season where you want to know who your established starter is for this group? Like, you know, taking sort of 65-35 or whatever the split is?
Well, I think for me, and it's easy for me to say because I don't, you know, don't work in the hockey ops department, but I just need to know the answer by the end of the season so it can, yeah, so it can guide the future. You know, if we're talking about sort of a smorgasbord of starts throughout the season, I don't think that's the worst thing. I just think the Calgary Flames need to know by the end of the season whether they have that number one guy in-house.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting question because I think to myself, like, even, and I know Boston is a number one guy now with Ullmark being traded, but you know they went 2 years with being one of the best teams in the NHL, best goaltending teams in the NHL, with both Swayman and Ullmark essentially splitting starts. The Islanders have had some success with going Sorokin and Varlamov, and so you wonder to yourself, like, I think you want to have your desired guy going into the playoffs, and I think that the trend that we're seeing is maybe that you have your guy in the playoffs, but I don't know how close to the end of the 60-start goaltender are we in this day and age in the NHL, which plays into Danny's question. Like, if Wolf, and say it's Wolf and Vladar, and they decide to bring back Vladar and re-sign him as he's a pending UFA, what if they're 50-50 split for the next 3-4 years, and that's just what they prove, that they both should be taking a lot of the workload? Is that the worst thing in the world?
I think if you can just figure out who your tandem is going to be for next year out of these three over the course of an 82-game NHL schedule goes a long way. Because, of course, Dan Vladar is a free agent at the end of the season. Cooley signed a 2-year deal, who will be on a one-way next year. And then you've got Dustin Wolf, who you probably secretly, well, maybe even not so secretly, root to emerge as your true number one, just given his pedigree, given the WHL and CHL Goal of the Year, two-time AHL Goal of the Year, one-time AHL MVP. I mean, it wouldn't shock me to think that vocally, Dustin Wolf stepping forward and just seizing the job is the best-case scenario for the Calgary Flames, right, organization as a whole. But if you can even just emerge with, okay, we know exactly what our goaltending tandem is going to look like for 25-26, and we don't have to enter training camp with this three-headed sort of competition and everything settled and set because two guys definitely took a step forward and proved that they can be everyday NHLers. I think from an organizational standpoint, I'd be satisfied with that.
The one thing I'd say on you know, goalie start numbers is Jacob Markstrom had 48 last season with a bunch of injuries, right? Like, it's easy for us to sit here and say this could be a platoon, but what we've seen early on from Ryan Huska is if he's got a guy that he trusts, mm-hmm. like, I think Jacob Markstrom could have been, if he stayed healthy, in the high 50s
for sure.
in yep. starts last year. And so, you know, it's always easy to split the goaltending workload in September, but there is an opportunity for one of these guys to earn the trust of Ryan Huska, and I think pile up more starts than we might be thinking.
Is there a point where, like, let's say, as Aaron was saying, you know, the expectation or the hope potentially is that Wolf eventually emerges as the full-time starter. If that's happening and Vladar is unsigned, do you want to be getting, how important is it to get Cooley NHL games to get a better look to see if he could be the backup, you know, behind Wolf in a year or two?
It's Wes and I did this segment earlier this week on kind of like our way too early hot takes, and one of mine was the Flames will rotate three goalies at the NHL level this year, not always carrying three goalies on the roster, but because all three are playing so well, you want to get all three of them playing time, which I don't know. I don't think it's completely out of the question. I think that if Cooley is having a great year in the American League and is kind of showing the Flames what they thought he was going to show them at that level, and all of a sudden they go through a down spell with both their guys at the NHL, I don't think it is crazy to think that maybe they pop Cooley in and give him three or four starts. And if they have to send Wolf temporarily to the American League, because he's, I know Wes's head explodes when you yeah. think about that, but he's putting the headset down, he's out of here.
Is that all it takes?
Yeah, that's really all.
Noted.
You talk about Wolf in the American League, Wes is out. But he's the only guy who is not waiver eligible. So I don't think it's completely out of the question anyway mm-hmm. that they rotate three. And then, as you said, like, injuries could play into it too, which they tend to just look at the injury list the Flames have all of a sudden here at training camp,
yeah.
even though a lot of them are minor.
To Danny's point about sort of making sure that you believe Devin Cooley can be an NHL regulars next season, if that's the way you go, I think it's important. Like, he did sign his contract becomes a one-way yep. next year, which shows they obviously have some belief in that already. But certainly, like, they're one of the fun things about covering this team this year is going to be the sort of mystery that follows all three goaltenders. Like, all three of these guys are getting a chance to prove something that they've yet to have a chance to prove in the NHL.
And I'd also add that, like, I sometimes forget that the 22-23 season, when Jacob Markstrom was struggling, Vladar's numbers dropped a little bit later in the year, but there was a stretch, I believe, in December where he started six or seven games in a row and played really, really well. So I don't want to in any way be discounting the possibility that Dan Vladar yep. comes in and makes his crease his own, because I think he's shown it in short spurts that he's capable. And, you know, we know that the hip affected him last year, but I don't think any of us are, but I don't think anyone should be ruling him out as claiming that job.
Closest one to having...
He's got the most experience.
Yeah, having been close to maybe seizing an NHL number one job. I know it hasn't happened yet, but he's kind of the closest one who's been able to do that. Jared in Seton, Texan, says, could you guys explain what the waiver situation is for the three goalies? I'm not sure I fully understand who is and not waiver eligible. So both Cooley and Vladar would have to clear waivers if they wanted to send them to the American League. So if it ends up being a Wolf and Vladar tandem, for instance, Cooley would have to clear waivers. The only guy who does not, and he's only got one more year of this being the case, that does not have to clear waivers is Dustin Wolf if they want to send him to the American League, which we do not want to see, because that makes Wes angry. We don't want to do that.
And you won't like him when he's angry.
No.
There is less than zero for Dustin Wolf left to accomplish yeah, in the AHL.
The only reason you'd be doing that is temporarily for roster reasons.
Yeah,
roster cap reasons.
I'll just repeat what I said when we talked about this earlier this week. You can't make roster decisions based on are we worried about losing our number three goalie? I get that there's a risk there. I get you never want to lose anyone on waivers, but if you say, let's keep our number one and our number three, just, you know, that makes more sense for roster.
Well, and the other thing that's important to point out is that once a guy clears waivers, so say that Devin Cooley clears waivers on October 2nd, then you still have, like, it goes by time on the NHL roster. So you've got 30 days on an NHL roster.
Or 10 games.
Or 10 games, yeah. So all of a sudden, you give yourself a decent window to get Cooley. So if you have him on the roster for 2 days, that's only 2 of 30, and he plays one game, that's only 1 of 10. So it extends the window that he doesn't have to clear waivers for as well.
It's also important.
Where's Pike?
It's also important to remember that if a team claimed Cooley, they couldn't just send him to the minors.
No, he has to be on the NHL roster.
And if they do, the Flames get first crack at him back.
Yeah. We're into the weeds here, boys.
Just to your point about you don't make roster decisions based on trying to protect your number three, I agree with you to an extent, but I disagree to the fact where you're only one injury away from like a Wolf Ignatchev goaltending tandem.
So you're going to send Dustin Wolf back to the minors.
I'm not saying
he's been a two-time goalie of the year. You're going to send him back to the minors and say, hey, man, you're almost done your waiver eligibility, and then we'll keep you in the
NHL. If I've got to do it for 2 days, once every 3 months, yeah, I do it.
Oh, like if you're trying to get a guy up for a spot start. I'm saying
no, I'm not sending Wolf down to spend a month with the Wranglers. I agree with you where there's absolutely zero for him accomplished on that. But if I'm trying to spot start someone or I'm trying to work around some sort of scenario, I have no problem sending Wolf for a paper transaction.
Well, sure, but tell me a scenario why you'd send Wolf to the minors to bring up Cooley.
Well, and I don't have that simply because the Flames have so much cap space. They can carry 23 players if they want. Like, they're not up against some sort of financial barrier where you can't. I'm just hypothetical.
Pat's right about my head exploding here. You can't send Dustin Wolf back to the minors.
The only
you can't skip lunch.
You also can't skip lunch. The only way that I could see it making sense would be if he's struggling. Like, what? We don't know how it's going to work, right? Like, and then
right.
maybe a 10 days down there, a game or two, get the confidence back up. We hope not to see that, of course.
You can always send a guy to the minors if it's performance-based. I just mean coming out of camp where we've seen him stop 50 of 53 shots. You know, the two goals he gave up the other night were weird
redirect
glance off a stick and then a weirder glance off a stick and a body. Like, I don't know what more Dustin Wolf has to show anyone in this room to prove he's an NHLer. If he needs a confidence booster in January,
I don't think 5 periods of preseason hockey proves you're an NHLer.
Uh-oh.
I was about to interject, and now I'm just...
Sitting back.
So... You know what would be a great way to prove he's an NHLer?
Give him NHL time.
Send him back to the minors for a while. Oh, my God.
For the record, I think he has done everything he can to prove at this point that he should be in the NHL full time. I think what he showed last year, at no point has Dustin Wolf looked like the NHL is too much for him. Have there been times where like, you know, maybe that part of his game, because he is undersized compared to other goalies, that might be that goal might have been because of that. Sure, but as Jordan Sigalet told us a number of months ago, like, well, what about the stops that he makes that other goalies who are 6'1" or 6'4" wouldn't make? And so at no point, Danny, have I ever felt like watching Dustin Wolf in the NHL, like, oh no, this league's too much for him. Do I know if he's going to be elite in the NHL or a starter in the NHL? No, but I do fully believe he belongs in the NHL, 943 in the preseason or not.
We also saw how much better he got with actual consistent NHL time last year. I mean, he was significantly better towards the end of the year when Vladar wasn't around because of the surgery, and he actually played games. I mean, 4 wins in a row to finish off the season. I mean, the numbers aren't all great there if you really dig into them, but I actually don't
think...
Wins
are the things that matter most, though.
Exactly. But also, I mean, if this isn't the year where you throw a young goalie to the Wolves and see if he sinks or swims, just to mix metaphors there a little bit, like, what year is it? I mean, this is the time to do it. You know, whether this team is competing for a playoff spot or not, they traded Jacob Markstrom in part to clear out a little bit of space to see what these guys are. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I agree with Wes. I can't imagine. They are way too deep and invested in Dustin Wolf to be doing anything to hurt him, and it's his NHL development that
Well,
matters.
To back Wes even more with why would you ever send him back to the AHL, and you mentioned, okay, well, what if he's playing poorly? I have him work through that at the NHL level regardless. I don't have him work through that at the AHL level.
To go on a different position, I somewhat feel the same way about a guy like Coronado, where I'm not sure what value there is for him in the AHL, and he's only been there for parts of one season. So,
Yeah. I mean, Coronado, I think, is potentially running into what Wolf ran into last year, where it's like, yeah, you probably should be in the NHL. We just might not have a spot for you just yet. They've made a spot for Wolf, and if Coronado keeps this up, they're going to have, whether he's made a spot for himself or they say, okay, we got to create a spot. He, you know, what he's done so far in preseason, and I know it's just preseason, but what he's done so far is, you know, pushing that ball down as well.
Well, you know what? Like, I came up with three topics, but I don't think that we're going to get
to... We're just going to keep arguing about Dustin Wolf.
Well, no, because we haven't talked in depth about either Hanzek or Brustevich, and I think we should. So let's hit on those two other potential biggest stories of training camp so far as we continue along. It's Danny Austin, Aaron Vickers, Wes Gilbertson around the table. Steinberg with you on a little Friday media roundtable here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. It's Flames Talk. You can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
A little Friday round table on Flames Talk from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Steinberg along with Wes Gilbertson, Danny Austin, Aaron Vickers, and we're kicking around the biggest story of training camp so far. We spent the first half of the hour diving in on goaltending, so let's talk about the other two big stories that were nominated, and that is Hunter Brustevich and the work that he's done on the blue line and the work of Sam Hanzek and how much he's really turned the narrative on his trajectory with a few really strong preseason games. He's here, Flames' leading preseason scorer with a goal and 6 points in three games. Let's start maybe with Brustevich as he enters his first ever NHL training camp. He now has preseason games under his belt for the first time. And I think we all probably, if we were all betting people, would say he starts in the American League and works his way up from there. But Vicks, for a guy that a lot of people suggested was, a third-pairing guy in the NHL as a power play specialist when they acquired him from Vancouver in January, he's had himself a pretty good camp, his first camp as a member of the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, absolutely. He's acquitted himself well in the organization, and I think it started with his performance in the two games he played at the Young Stars Classic in Penticton, where he really sort of left an impression, earned that sort of veteran or that you've showed so much in the first two, you don't have to play the third kind of, I don't want to call it a gift, but the tip of the cap from the coaching staff and the management staff saying, you know what, I don't think a third game in Penticton is necessary to show what you can do and save it for main camp. And I remember texting you during the, was it the Vancouver game, where I'm like, I think he's going to play games. And you so wittingly pointed out, well, yeah, because he's CHL eligible, back in the OHL, he can play in the AHL, he can play in the NHL. But the fact of the matter remains for me is what I've seen in his, again, small sample size in preseason action, though, that he isn't in over his head. He's not over his skis. He's actually, for me, been one of Calgary's better defensemen, not just offensively, but in his two-way game as well. And I think that bodes well for a defenseman, as you pointed out, that, he's all offense, and when you lead the entire Ontario Hockey League in assists, you'll get kind of painted with that brush. But I remember even seeing him in Penticton, not this past year, but the year prior, and going back and looking at my reports, I'm like, this guy has middle pairing potential. He could be a number three or number four. The defensive liability thing, I think, got overblown a little bit. And when you score 90-plus points, it's easy for somebody that's watching YouTube clips or just looking and scouting the stat line saying, well, if you're this good offensively, maybe you don't have a two-way game. But I thought his overall 200-foot game has been pretty impressive for a guy that, as we mentioned, is still eligible for another year junior.
I think what Hunter Brustevich has accomplished for me in this training camp is started to separate himself from the group of prospects in terms of who might be ready right now. Like, I think Pat and I talked on Flames Talk this week about the fact that, you know, one of the things you're now weighing as you decide whether to sign Tyson Barry is what you've seen from Brustevich and how quickly you think he might be ready. But I even look at the guys who I expect to start the season with the Wranglers in Kuznetsov, probably Solovyov, Grushnikov,
Poirier.
You have a couple different types of players in there, but I think Hunter Brustevich, and I'll just keep repeating, yeah, it's a small sample size, it's early, but I think he started to separate himself from that group, and given how difficult it's going to be to earn ice time as a defenseman in this organization with the way Craig Conroy's loaded up over the past year or so, I think that's a really important step.
And I'd be very curious. I mean, so we Wes and I talked to Ray Edwards probably, what, first day of camp. And he just said, he was like, Hunter Brustevich had that summer that you want your prospects to have. He saw what, you know, an NHL camp looked like last year, and he came back, and he was like, it's not that he's bulky. It's just that he's lost all his baby fat and has the body of a man at his age. And I am curious. You know, I don't think he'll be super open because they're teammates, but you see the offensively talented defenseman who they drafted this year. What does that say to Hunter Brustevich? It clearly he recognized he needed to separate himself, have that summer, come back. You don't want to be in 2 years competing with Zane Preck or any of these guys for that job. You want to be getting ahead now, and I think he's done it. And like you said, like, I think we all expect, like, I'm at the point where I expect to see him at some point in the NHL this year.
Yeah, I think so too, like, especially knowing he is a right shot guy, and while the Flames do have a lot of them, that is still kind of the more coveted shot in the NHL. He's got that, and if he gets off to a nice start in the American League, I could see a recall, and whether it's a permanent recall like we've seen from a lot of guys, or whether it's, you know, just a 2 or 3 week thing. I think Brustevich has really separated himself very quickly. I'll be perfectly honest, not just because it took us about 2 weeks to figure out how to say his last name, and now we've got that figured out, but when they acquired him in the Lindholm trade, yes, there was the first-round pick, but everything that I had spoken to people about is like, hey, this is the guy that we, you know, this is the coveted guy. And at the time, in January, go look at his OHL stats with Kitchener, and you're like, okay, I can see why, and he is quickly turned into, one of my questions was going to be, we won't have time to get to it today, but one of the questions that we had today was, hey, who's the number one prospect in the Flames organization? And Vix, I think you can make a pretty good argument that Brustevich is right there in the mix for that.
Especially if you're factoring in timeline, and as we mentioned, the challenge for him is going to be when he doesn't make the team, if he doesn't make the team, but more likely when he doesn't make the team and gets sent to the Wranglers. How do you use that? How do you respond? What do your first 10 games look like when you're in the AHL? And the challenge for him is to continue all that momentum to put himself in a spot, like Wes mentioned, that he's leapfrogged Poirier and Grushnikov and Yermo and all these other defensemen, Kuznetsov and maybe even Solovyov, depending on what happens with him and where he ends up, that you've put yourself in a position that, okay, and we saw it last year when Pospisil and Zeri didn't make the team out of camp, but then continued to have really strong showings in the American Hockey League level until a spot became open or something needed to be shooken up a little bit. They get the recall, and of course, they never look back. Now, I'm not saying Brustevich is going to, you know, bide his time, wait for his call-up, and then be a 70-game NHL defenseman next season, but you have to have that mentality of, I know I'm close, I didn't get there, but if I continue doing these things that they're asking me to do, at some point when an opportunity does arise, if I continue my work ethic, if I continue to impress, I'm going to have to be the guy that they recall. And I think that's the mentality that he should be having.
I think that, you know, if you're a Flames fan, I think one of the most exciting things about Hunter Brustevich is the way to this point he's responded to slights. Like, you know, the Vancouver Canucks didn't put him in a preseason game last year. He was ticked off about that. He went back to the OHL and had a gazillion assists. You know, people started saying he couldn't play defense. He went back to the OHL and asked to be put on the penalty kill so he could start to prove people wrong. He didn't make the U.S. team for the World Juniors with a bunch of guys that he'd come through the National Development Team program with. That's something that has continued to fuel him. And so you raise a great point. You know, it's always interesting to see how guys respond to going back to the minors, but everything that we know about Hunter Brustevich up to this point, I think, indicates probably use it in exactly the right way. And the only other thing I want to add about him, you just never hear. Ryan Husk is a great interview. He gives us incredible insights. You don't hear coaches in the NHL compare a 19-year-old defenseman to the guy who led their team in ice time the last three seasons. You just you don't hear it. They don't want to put those sort of expectations. They don't want to draw that sort of comparison. So Ryan Huska, 2 days in a row saying, I see some Rasmus Anderson there.
Yeah.
Man, I'm fascinated. I really am.
Could you call him up for the sixth spot? Like, realistically, playing with, what, Jake Bean, I guess?
Bean or Ball would probably be who he'd be playing with, right?
I mean, Huska said Ball is top four.
That's true. So that, so if they go Ball and Anderson then Bean and Brustevich?
Well, I don't think you recall him if you don't have the intention of playing him, other than to maybe give him a little carrot and say, hey, we appreciate the work you've done. Here's another zero on your paycheck, and you go back, and when there is an opportunity for you, we'll be sure to get you in. But if and when he's recalled, it's for him to make his NHL debut in my book.
Yeah. And I ask in part because one of the other questions we're not going to get to that you had sent us was who was I most clear on sort of their role in the roster. And for me, that is a little bit Joel Hanley, which is not the sexiest name to be dropping. But, I am curious with that sixth spot. If it's not Hanley, what do you do with him? And I don't know that Brustevich is necessarily going to come in and do the same things Hanley does, right?
Yeah. So the only thing, you know, I would – I think the really important thing to remember is you always hear from this management and even this coaching staff about, you know, they firmly believe that one of the steps is showing you're a go-to guy in the AHL.
Yeah.
And I can't think of many examples at the Saddle Dome of guys who've been allowed to skip that step. And I think next week at some time we'll be talking about Brustevich and Sam Honzek going back to the AHL despite really impressive falls. And I think that's exactly what you're going to hear is, yeah, you want that number six spot. Hey, Sam Honzek, you want to become a regular on Nazem Kadri's wing like you were in practice today? Your next step is go be a difference maker in the AHL, and if you do that, we'll see you sooner than later.
And I think we learned with Coronado a little bit last year. He had an amazing training camp, a great preseason, and needed time in the AHL.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think it's a knock on those guys that they need. They might need 6 months. They might need longer than that. It's an important part of the development process for a reason. So when those guys go down, no one should be seeing it as an indictment of them.
And Craig Conroy keeps telling us, like, the last thing we're going to do is rush these kids and risk – you know, sort of spoiling the bunch, and that's the right approach.
I know that when Penticton was going on, Vix, you and I were there, and a couple of times I showed you on my phone, like, look at this, like, the discourse about Sam Honzek.
Yeah.
And, like, the oh, my gosh, well, at the time, he was, like, 14 months into his time as a Flame. How could they have drafted this guy? He's a bust. And I just remember having a conversation with Craig there, and it's like, no, not a bust. Like, we don't, like, guys develop at different rates. And of course they develop at different rates, and of course the organization would think that. They drafted him in the first round for a reason, and yeah, he had a really rough first year. We're moving on to Honzek, which was Danny's choice as the biggest story of training camp to wrap up this round table. Yeah, his first year in the organization, guys, was rough. He was injured in training camp. That derailed the start of his season. Was not as big an impact maker with the Vancouver Giants. Once he was healthy, got injured again. It was not a good, as I'm talking to a draft expert, it was not a great draft plus 1 year for Sam Honzek. That doesn't mean he's a bust, though. And that whole conversation about him being a bust, it never made a lick of sense to me at the age of 19, just over a year after being drafted.
Well, they didn't select him in 2024 to be in the lineup 3 months later, and they didn't select him in the first round in 2024 for him to be in the lineup 15 months later. Sam Honzek wasn't necessarily, just from his skill set and what he needed to work on in his development path, wasn't an immediate impact first rounder. And yeah, to your point, he had an absolutely miserable season last year, his D+1 season, with injuring camp, then gets back, then injured, then gets back, injured again. Like, it was such a stop start that it was almost a complete write-off of his developmental year. And even in Penticton, like, he didn't jump off the page in Penticton. He had individual moments where he came back and you're like, oh yeah, he's definitely stronger, he's definitely faster, but he's not necessarily linking two or three attributes or skills in his game at the same time to use that speed and that size to bully a junior age defenseman or work down low. So I think the turnaround that we've seen, the second camp started here in Calgary, has been pretty dramatic year over year, as well as even week over week. And it's given sort of a renewed sense of optimism that he's back on the right path because, again, it wasn't going to be something that development for any player is never linear. You never just draw a straight line up on your, I don't know, is that a line chart? Some sort of graph anyways. I'm not well versed in my different Excel graphs other than pi, if you can imagine that.
If it makes you feel better, you can't figure out goalie development either.
Oh! But if there's a way that they can move Hanzik down to the minors and continue that path, use the confidence that he's got and continue to build his game, there's no reason to suggest that he's not back on track.
I don't think he's just back on track. I think he looked great. Like, I actually think he's significantly better than there was any reasonable reason to expect him to be in camp. And I was talking to him yesterday, and, you know, hey, you got 6 points, focusing on all of that, and he was giving me hockey player answers. And then I asked him about drawing the penalty in the corner against Desharnais, and he lit up. That's all he wanted to talk about. He was like, I went into the corner, and I battled with a guy, and I didn't back down, and I drew a penalty and got 2 minutes for my team. And I don't know that we saw that level of aggression's probably the wrong word, but that level of confidence going against one of the biggest defensemen in the NHL,
yeah,
and coming out on top. And, you know, there's been so much made of him working with Pospisil, rightfully so, but if we didn't see that edge to him last year, and I think we're seeing it now. And I honestly, like, I like you, I wasn't saying the word flop, but you had to wonder a little bit if, you know, what they'd seen in him. And now you're seeing it, and I honestly think he's going to be a very productive player in the AHL this year and possibly get some games up, but he's just blown me away. I had no idea.
Guys, I was in a coffee shop this morning doing a little bit of work, and you know, the way I was set up in my laptop, I was kind of between where you order your coffee and the front door, and a longtime scout, someone doesn't work for the Flames organization, we'd all recognize him from the press box over the years, walked in, and we were just catching up. I asked how much he's been paying attention to the Flames so far, and the guy he said quite a bit. He was in Penticton, and he wanted to talk about Sam Hanzik, and he said that's a guy who's starting to show everything that he's capable of. And we were kind of, you know, joking about how many people were willing to write him off externally after an injury riddled last season in junior, and he shook his head and he said, you got to be patient with these kids, he's only 20. And I said, well, he's actually 19. He threw his hands up in disgust, and that ended our conversation. He went off to took off to order his coffee, and it struck me in that moment, like,
was he mad that you corrected him, or was
I was gonna say, not the first time somebody's thrown up their arms at something Wes has said and then just immediately walked away.
I just thought to myself, you know, what a measure of Sam Hanzik's progress that someone who has been scouting this league for decades, that's the first guy he wants to talk about. And that's, yeah, he's going to need AHL time, and he's going to need to show he can do it in November and December against 28-year-olds in the AHL. But I think the confidence boost that Sam Hanzik will take from what he's done, and the knowledge of the way his game can ultimately translate, I think bodes really well for him.
And I do think there's a lesson. I mean, Zary is similar, right? He had the broken ankle and came back, and it took him a long time to get back up to speed. And there were guys saying, oh, this is him, this is the finished product. I think at that age and at that moment in your development, losing that stretch of time really sets you back, and it takes some time. So, you know, Hanzik wasn't just injured in training camp. He must have been here. I mean, we saw him in the stands all the time. He just hung around Calgary rehabbing before going back and playing. So
I think he'd been playing for like 2 weeks when he went to World Juniors.
Yeah. So last year, like, I'm not saying it's a write-off, but I really think that judging guys, it's a lesson that I've got to learn as someone who tries to do this job, is if they're coming off injuries at that age, just give them a little bit more time.
Yep.
We've never done a four-person roundtable before. Do we do 3 stars at the end of this?
Of the four-person roundtable?
Yeah. I would love to hear your analysis on this.
You know what? You three.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
Team player. Wow.
That is a good team player. I like that.
Hey, when Vix leaves the room, the rest of us will talk about it. I got a different answer.
Do you think you'll be involved in his different answer?
I don't know. I'm just going to throw up my hands, not say anything, and walk out.
Yeah, I do that to
That's
people.
Fair.
I hear.
That's fair. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Danny Austin on Twitter at Danny Austin _9. And Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. That is another Friday roundtable. I don't know if these are going to stay on Friday. I think they might move to a Monday type situation going forward. But I enjoy them. Thanks, thanks for doing that. Thanks to Vicks. Thanks to Wes. And thanks to Danny on the debut. Debut Danny. How did you feel? Good?
I thought that was good. I mean, I got to avoid the Dustin Wolf meltdown between these two guys. So
I do have to ask, though, were there 8 other Danny Austins on Twitter before you _9 that?
No, I was the Danny Austin, and then I hit an age where I thought it was arrogant. So okay. I changed it, and it was the only one. The only
if there's one thing somebody will call you, it's humble.
I follow all 9 on Twitter just to make sure I don't miss anything.
That'll wrap us up. Thank you, boys. Danny Austin, Aaron Vickers, Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. And, of course, Cam and Shan, our producers this hour as well. That'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive on this Friday. Sports Drive at 5 brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.